Sometimes it's always harder to follow certain specials than it is others. Music plays a part in all of our lives. One song that really meant a lot to me in the last just few months with all I've kind of been going through. Jeremy Camp has a song out, Living in the Moment, and if you haven't heard it, you might listen to it. It's got some pretty good words to doing that. But just like she was just singing, Jesus getting a hold of us, but then also how many of us are allowing him to get a hold of us and to live with him? He's there. It's just often we don't feel him, or we're the ones that are basically leaving or doing whatever. We've been in the book of 1 Corinthians, and so we've been going through it, and we're looking at it again today. In the background, what you have is in chapter 8, Paul, if you remember, starting last week, he starts to address some questions that are asked. And last week, we had the Marriage Counseling 101, in which they asked him questions, and then Paul is addressing questions that they asked him. And what happens is many times people try to give answers to questions that are not being asked with the answers that are given. And so what happens is, you notice Paul summarized Christ's teachings, which are four different chapters in the New Testament on marriage, in one sentence. Because that was not the question he was being asked, what Christ was addressing. He was answering questions that they were asking him about, specific questions. I had it happen several times when I taught school. One question they loved to ask me, and they usually called me Mr. K when I taught, Mr. K, did Jesus turn water into wine? Now, why were they asking me? Okay. Notice their answer. They're going to use your answer. They're trying to get an answer to justify something. How many times does that happen to you? Another one they would do to me a lot of times, Mr. K, have you ever gone to an R-rated movie? Okay. Now, the R-rated movie I went to was called Crossing the Switchblade. How many of you remember Crossing the Switchblade, talking about Teen Challenge? And today, that would barely be a PG. But anyway, it had to do with, but again, why are they asking the question? They're wanting to take your answer to go to their parents and then justify what they're doing. Same thing can happen in 1 Corinthians 7. We're taking answers to Paul's answers he's given to their questions and trying to apply to something that he wasn't applying to. And so what happens then, when you get to chapter 8, it's in the middle of what you're going to have. And I'm going to give you mostly a summary because I can't cover all of it. It has to do with Christian liberty. We started, if you remember, chapter 6. Christian liberty, when it has to deal with the laxity of Christian liberty. Today he's going to talk about Christian liberty again. In the background, in 1 Corinthians 8, it has to do in two different ways. One is that of personal, and when the person would go then to the temple and offer a sacrifice, the undesirable parts were burned up, and the desirable parts of the meat they would then take home and they would eat and eat it. So then what happens is, when they're at a pagan temple and they're doing this, as a Christian, what do you now do? You also had a state function in which the same thing would happen with the state, in which they would then have an undesirable part would be burned up, and then it would then be sold in the marketplace. The parts that were good. So should you buy it in the marketplace, since it's been offered to an idol? So what happens to the questions, your three questions that Paul is trying to address in the next couple of chapters, is it accessible of buying and eating meat for one of these sacrificial animals? Should I be able, is it right for me to go and to eat this meat or buy this meat in the marketplace? What happens when you're invited as a guest to somebody's home and they bring out that meat? Should you eat it? A third question, the accessibility of attending one of these pagan sacrifices and enjoying a meal it's in conjunction with. What you had is the largest places for them to gather in these cities are going to often be in the temple. And it may not have anything to do with the worship, but it's where they're meeting. Should you as a Christian go to that temple then and do it? So these are questions they're asking then. And he is now wanting to try to address. So you think about it, I think a question we can ask ourselves today, you know, you have this knowledge that we have, we can bring liberty, but liberty needs to be controlled by love. We have liberty to do a lot of things, but should be controlled by love. And so in chapter 3, he wants to talk about being controlled by love. Excuse me, in chapter 8. In chapter 9, he's going to talk about his personal. He had liberty to do a lot of things, but Paul limited his liberty because of what he wanted to accomplish in his life. How many of us are willing to say no to our rights in order to have greater purpose of what we're doing? So he wants to look at those couple of things. So notice then, in chapter 8, you have Christian liberty should be controlled by love. And notice the contrasting solutions that you have in verse 1 to 3. Now concerning sacrifices to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge makes arrogance, but love edifies. So you have two ways to respond, knowledge or love. And he then is going to go on and he's going to talk about a little bit about knowledge. Notice it in verse 2, if anyone supposes he knows anything, he has not yet known as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by him. Okay, in order for you to love, if you're using the word for agape love can only come by way of the Holy Spirit. So you cannot love as you should if you do not know God, because you cannot muster up agape love. You can muster up phileo love, eros love, but you can't muster up agape love. It only comes by God. So what happens is when you come to this knowledge will just puff it up, but love can edify. So the question is going to come down to when we're trying to address this pagan part of these sacrifices. Am I going to do it just through knowledge, or am I going to do it through love? Notice the first part then that you're going to have on here. The principle of knowledge then is going to be in verse 4 to 6. Therefore, concerning the eating of these things sacrificed to idols, we know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world, and there is no God but one. And even if there are so-called gods, or rather in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is but one God, the Father, from whom we are all things. We exist for him, the one Lord and Jesus Christ, and by through whom all things, we exist through him. Okay, so when you see all these idols, have you ever been overseas in India and Malaysia? It's amazing. I mean, you go in and there's idols everywhere. I mean, I've never seen so many idols. And you look at them and you think, how in the world? You have the idol, the monkey idol. And then you have the elephant idol. And you have all this stuff, and they're burning incense, and then they even, everywhere you go, there's somebody doing something. But in their mind, those idols are what? They're real. But in knowledge, we know who made the idol. Human hands did. And so what happens is, you can have knowledge, but knowledge needs to be governed. Just because I have the knowledge. So for those people, it's real. And what happens is Satan will use these things. They also had the people with transportation. And they even had their little idol out. And what happens is, then before they take people out on taxi, they will offer their sacrifices before they go. And what happens then with Satan's idea or demonic activity, if they all of a sudden forget to offer a sacrifice or put money, what happens if they have a wreck? What are they going to blame it on? They're going to blame it that they didn't do it. Therefore, in their mind, it's real. Therefore, from then on, they're going to do what? So for in their mind, that is a real idol. It is a real thing. You and I realize, no, we made it, and it's demonic, and it's not the real thing. But notice what happens is, so you have the principle of knowledge. Yes, we have knowledge. But we have to remember, it tells us two things at the end of verse 6 there. We exist for him and through him. We don't exist for ourselves or through ourselves. We exist for Christ and through Christ. Every decision we make with knowledge needs to come because of the knowledge we have for him. We have to control it. So notice first of all the knowledge that you have, principle of knowledge. And so you're going to have those who realize and say, hey, there's nothing wrong with any of these idols. They're not even real. Eat the meat, buy the meat, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But what happens when you have people who come out of that background who don't have that knowledge, and they watch you and follow your example, can it cause them problems? And so just the principle of knowledge just says, well, who cares? It's not real. I can do what I want. So then notice Paul now wants to go, hey, it's not just the principle of knowledge. You need the principle of love. So a question you can ask, or we can all ask, do I live my life for myself or for others? Would you, how many would you say that most Americans live for who?
Themselves.
Most Christians do also. So notice then the next principle, the principle of love, teaches consideration. Notice in verse 7 and then down to verse 12. It says, however, not all men have this knowledge, but some being accustomed to idol until now, eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. Okay, so they watch it and they see it and they realize, hey, it's in their mind it's wrong, and they do it and it's defiled. Notice the second thing. Food will not commend us to God. We are neither the worse if we eat it nor the better. So it doesn't matter whether you do or you don't. You know better if you do or if you don't. Okay, so now the issue then isn't the food, it's going to be what? It's your brother and your sister in Christ. So then notice in verse 9, take care lest this liberty of yours somehow becomes a stumbling block to the weak. So notice one is defiling, two, he follows your actions and your stumbling block. In verse 10, if anyone sees you who has knowledge dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if being weak, he's strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols. So he says, hey, you're a believer, you've been a believer a long time, but it's okay for Dan to do it, it must be what? It's okay for me to do it, and then his conscience is going to defile him. Notice what happens then. Through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. He follows your example, and in himself, then he is convinced that he blew it, and he sinned. And then notice then in verse 12, thus, by sinning against the brother and wounding their conscience when it was weak, you sinned against Christ. Did I have the knowledge? Could I do it? Hey, there's no such thing as an idol. I can go do it. I can go buy the meat. I can go eat the meat. It's just me. But if my brother sees me and follows it and it causes him to stumble, I am sinning against who? My brother and the Lord. So I think it's important. Do I have, if I love my brother, then what do? I don't do it. Because it doesn't matter whether I eat the meat or I don't eat it, what's it going to do to my brother? But most of us don't care about the brother, we care about who? We care about ourselves, and hey, I like that steak and it's a good price. That's the honest truth what we have. So notice again, you have the principle of knowledge, but that knowledge needs to then be limited, that we are for Christ and through Christ. We then have to have the principle of love, that we want to be considerate to our brothers. So I think, again, is my concern for my walk or my brother's walk? I think most of the time we need to remember that. Notice then, I think in verse 13, the third principle I think we have. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I'll never eat meat again, that I might not cause my brother to stumble. And the word there for the stumble is that of a snare and getting him trapped. The principle of servanthood. Paul says what? If it's going to cause him to stumble, then when I'm around that brother, I will never what? I'll never eat it. Why? Because I love my brother, and I know the idol is not real, and the gods aren't real, but I, out of love for my brother, I don't want him to follow my example, and I don't want to do it. So the same thing can happen on whatever things we're looking at today. We all have different things. Every few years, we have some new hot topic we're dealing with. And we have them today as well. So think about it. Are we serving someone, or what are we serving? Who or what do we serve? Would you agree we're all serving something? So the question comes down, am I serving the Lord, or am I serving myself, or what am I serving? So notice then, in the chapter 8, he says what? When it comes to Christian liberty, it needs to be controlled by love. Just having knowledge is not enough. but out of consideration for my brother and servanthood for him, I'm going to then control it. So what happens then when he gets into the next chapter, Paul wants to say, hey, I want you guys to follow me. I'm not asking you to do anything that I didn't do. So I'm going to cover it, and we'll break it down more in the weeks to come. But I want to try to, so you can kind of see the outline of what he's doing. He has rights in verse 1 down to verse 14. Christian liberty should be self-regulated. We should self-regulate our liberty. But notice his rights. His role is in verse 1 and verse 2. Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship from the Lord. Okay, so his role is, hey, I'm an apostle, and you all know it because I'm an apostle to the Gentiles, and I came to you, and I was there for 18 months, and you all have come to know Christ because of what? Because of my apostleship leading you to Christ. Okay, so that's my role. Notice his rights then in verse 3, starting, my defense to those who examine me is this. Do we not have a right to eat and drink? Okay, so Paul is saying, had my right then for to come to you, and I'm working for you, and doing the spiritual things, you all should be paying me. Okay, did Paul charge him anything? No. Because he didn't want them to ever say that he was doing it for money. So the first right I have that I've denied myself was I had the right with which to charge you for my services. Notice the second one in verse 5. Do we not have a right to take along a believing wife even as the rest of the apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Okay, so if he brings along a wife, who should also help support the wife as well as Paul? They should. He's serving them. Okay, I had the right, but I didn't do it. What about in verse 6? Only Barnabas and I have the right to refrain from work. Okay, so Paul is having to work outside in order, doing tent making in order to make ends meet. Should he have to do that? But why is he doing it? So they can't ever say that he was preaching the gospel and doing things for what? For money. Okay, so I'm asking you to give up your liberties for the sake of your brothers. And hey, folks, I'm not asking you to do anything that you have not personally seen me do. And though I gave up my right to pay, I gave up my right to bring along a wife to you as support, I gave up the right to work alongside, which, by the way, that would be not easy. To work all that with the doing the spiritual parts and then also being a tent maker. You know, when they were doing the tent making, that was all done in air conditioning. You knew that. Along the Mediterranean Sea, this nice humidity and stuff. Notice then he has some reminders then starting in 7 down to 11 and then also in 13 and 14. He gives you some reminders. Who at any time serves as a soldier at his own expense? Okay, so if you're serving as a soldier, who pays your expense? The country doesn't it? Okay, I'm a soldier of Jesus Christ, right? So why should I be paying for it? Next one, who plants a vineyard and does not eat the fruit of it? So when you plant, do things in there, if there's grapes or there's something that's there and you're needing something, it was your right as a worker to take part of it and eat it. He goes on and says, or who tends a flock and does not have the milk? You're taking care of the sheep, the goats, whether it be the, and also the cows, whatever it might be, and you wanted milk, then you would milk the cow. That was your right as a worker. Very similar when David, remember, took care of the, and protected all the animals, if you remember, Nabal, and then what happened with him not being paid for it. He had the right to be paid. He's doing the same thing. Hey, I had the right. We all look out and we see all the rights. Notice I've given up all those rights. And I've given them up for you all. So you go on and he goes down a little bit further when you get to 13. Actually down in a little bit, he quotes in Deuteronomy. He also is quoting out of Christ does this in Luke. in verse 9, where it's written, you shall not muzzle the ox while it's threshing. God's not concerned about an ox, is he? Obviously, that's part of the, you know, the ox is doing all the work and stuff's falling on the ground. You don't put a muzzle. You allow it to eat while it's going around for it to get the nourishment that it needs and for the strength. Same thing happened to the worker. And then in 10, or is he speaking altogether for our sake? Yes, for our sake it is written, because the plowman ought to plow in hope, the thresher should thresh in hope of sharing the crops. So when they do all this work, he ought to reap from the benefit. Paul's no different, but he limits it for what reason? He limits not charging them because he loved them. He doesn't want to be accused of doing it for the wrong reason. So then what, notice when you go to 13 and 14, we'll go back to 12 in a second. Do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple? Those who attend regularly to the altar have their share with the altar. So also the Lord desires those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel. All right, so Paul has the right, correct, to charge for his services, but Paul does not. So he's asking them, Christian liberty and doing the different things that's being in the temple, yes, they're not real, but limit it because of your love for your fellow believers who are not strong in their knowledge of the Word of God. You limit it because of their consideration for them and because of serving it. Paul then is going to tell you why he restricts it, starting in verse 12 and then also then through the 27. The rest of the chapter. It's interesting when you look at it. Notice in 12, and others share the right over you, those who do not do, excuse me. If others share the right over you, do we not all the more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we endured all things, that we may cause no hindrance to what? Gospel of Christ. I restricted it for what reason? For the gospel of Christ. You cannot buy the gospel, and I am not going to do it for the purpose of gaining money, for you all then said I preached for money, and you all then think you can buy your salvation. I limited my use. He goes on and talks a little bit more about it, in this same part, when he talks about in verse 15 to 18, when he says, but I have none of these things. Am I not writing these things that it may be done so in my case? Would it be better for me to die than to have any of man who make my boast in an empty one? Notice, if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for I am under compulsion, for woe is me if I don't preach the gospel. But if I do this voluntarily, I have reward, but if it's against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted to me. What then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as not to make full use of my rights in the gospel. It's amazing. He says what? I've been steward, and I'm a steward of an apostle of Jesus Christ. I am required to preach the gospel. But if I do it voluntarily, I get a reward. And I'm voluntarily doing it free of charge, so you cannot believe you can buy it, nor am I doing it for it. He willingly did it. I mean, you think about it, day after day, week after week, month after month, everywhere he goes, he worked so that not to charge the people didn't think they could buy it. Is he asking them to give up anything he wasn't willing to do? That's the reason why in chapter 11 and verse 1 it says, imitate me. Paul's talking about, I'm not asking you to do anything that I didn't do. Okay, so notice the first reason he gives up charging is what? For the sake of the gospel. Notice the second reason he does it, starting in verse 19 down to 22. And notice it says, for though I am free from all men, I made myself a slave to all, that I might win more. And a Jew, I become as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, though not being under the law, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those who are without the law. For the weak I become weak, that I might win the weak. I become all things to all men, that I might win some of them. So notice then, he restricts it for the sake of the gospel, and he restricts it for the sake of souls. So if I'm dealing with Jewish people, do they have certain dietary laws? So when Paul's with them, is he going to eat pork? No. And he's going to follow those things. When he is with others, he's going to not to be an offense. And that everywhere you go, you're going to have things that don't make sense to you. What's offensive? I've never figured out yet when I was in Malaysia and in India why I had to wear a collared shirt. What difference does it make if I'm teaching whether I have a collared shirt on or an uncollared shirt? And they both locations made it very pointed to me that I had to have a collared shirt on in order to teach. Okay? So if you're going to be up there teaching, what do you need to do? You wear a collared shirt. Even when it's over 100 degrees outside and there's no air conditioning and half the time there's no fan. You're burning up. They didn't sweat, but I can't say the same for myself. Okay? But if you're wanting to deal with them and minister to them, you willingly do what? And does your attitude come across? Your attitude, just like Debbie was saying, your attitude, you make a choice. You know about it ahead of time, you make the choice. So notice then, he restricted for the sake of the gospel. Two, he did it for the sake of their soul. Gentile, Jew, free, whatever it might be. He limited the use. Notice then in 24 to 27, he's going to give you the third reason why he limits it. Do you not know that those who run a race all run to receive the prize? Run in such a way that you might win. Now what takes place in Corinth every couple of years that Paul was witnessing, had witnessed, and they would know? It's the Asmatic Games. And so they had rules that they had to abide by. And when you had some great benefits, if you won, whatever it was, whether it's boxing or running or whatever it was, if you won, what were the benefits? You never had to pay taxes again the rest of your life. How nice would that be? Pretty nice, wouldn't it? Okay, you also got a wreath. Obviously, you got other things, and you didn't get the recognition. Very similar today. Certain athletes or what we have, the recognition is there. Okay, so notice, first of all, Paul says when you are in a race, you need to run it to win. You and I are in a race too. And Paul says, I'm giving all these things up for the purpose of winning. I'll never forget when Will ran, he had a lot of athletes on his team that had a lot more ability. In fact, the majority had more ability. But it was amazing listening to these different athletes when I would go to his meets or whatever. And they didn't care about winning. They didn't care about any of it. A large number of them, they were there for one reason. No, because there's girls there. Well, there were boys. They were there for one reason. Not to win, not to go out that hard. Didn't want, they were there just to meet, you know, people of the opposite sex. That's the only reason they were there. What's the purpose? To be the very best that you can be and run the race. Notice then he goes on, verse 25. And everyone competes in games, exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, we an imperishable. They would put a wreath in what happened in the hot sun or anything else. It's going to perish. And even getting taxes exempt for life, how long are you going to live? But do you live for eternity? Okay, so notice then, you have to compete according to it, which he's then talked about earlier, if you remember, that Glenn covered in chapter 3 when talking about all the to doing things for God's glory and not my glory, building with the right things. He's talking about the same thing. So when we compete, we have to do it for the right reason. You and I can do a lot of things for our own glory. We can do a lot of things. We can even say the right thing. Can you lead somebody to Christ and be out of fellowship with God? His word doesn't return void. And so I think it's important for us to recognize we need to do it to be perishable. Notice then in 26, therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. He's not out there shadow boxing. When he gets in a ring, he's doing what? he's going to win. Notice in 27, I buffet my body and make it my slave, lest possibly after I preach to others or myself should be disqualified. So notice then, Paul restricts himself for the sake of the gospel. Paul restricts himself for the sake of souls. And Paul restricts himself for the line, does he not? And not the dot. He wants the eternal reward that only is given when you're doing it for the right reasons. So is Paul asking the Corinthians to do anything that he didn't do? No. And so I think it's important. It's one of the reasons why, don't you love it when people can truly say, do as I do? Much, much easier to say, follow me and do what I do. Let's think of some application. Is my concern over my rights or my Christian brothers' walk in Christ? Most of the time we get controlled by what? We get upset and we want what? My rights. Do I live my life for myself? Or do I live it through Christ for Christ? Isn't that what he said from Paul in Philippians 1? For me to live is Christ and what? Die again. Who or what are you serving? And then I think one, can I make the following claims that Paul made when he restricted his rights? I did it for the sake of the gospel. I did it for the sake of souls, and I did it for eternity. Can we make those exact same claims? And so I think it's important when Paul looks at it, you know, hey, it really doesn't matter that food that's being offered. I care about my brother. What's it going to do for him? Is it going to help him, or is it going to hinder him?